Hello, welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer, and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. But if this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. Of course, if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. Every profession needs its heroes, the people who have the courage to challenge convention, drive outstanding achievement, give our discipline a noble name. In this episode, we'll be speaking in depth to one such hero, learn about what they do, how they've got here, and a bit about what's made them who they are today. I'm delighted to be joined today by the co-founder and marketing account director at Digital Radish, Rene Edwards. Rene, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Hello, I am very well, thanks, Dave. It's just twice in 1 week for us, isn't it?
It is. We were just at the London event the BMC runs on, 2 days ago. How was that for you?
Yeah, brilliant. Do you know what? It was the first time for me actually getting out face-to-face to a marketing event in a couple of years. So, do you know what? It was lovely. And I think, you know, obviously what we touched on was that kind of, you know, what do we do with events kind of going forward? How's that going to change? Are we going to have a hybrid? And it was just great just to, you know, to learn in a face-to-face, you know, environment, what, you know, what people were planning, you know, and it was a really, really good debate, I felt.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that when they've gone to their first kind of, we can't call it post-pandemic, but perhaps post-lockdown face-to-face event, that it's felt for them kind of a really joyful situation, because, you know, that face-to-face with people for the first time in a very, very long while.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, not to get too carried away and overexcited and have too many vodka tonics, as it were.
Yes, not too many on the first occasion. Anyway, well, it was good to see you there. So, we're recording this interview over Zoom, so I can see you've got a very, very impressive looking background. This kind of great sort of 3 or 4 story. Almost town hall opposite you. So where do I find you today?
Yes, good. I'm actually in the office.
Okay.
So by Tottenham Court Road, and we're opposite the Bloomsbury Hotel, which is now the Coral Rooms, which is what you can see behind me. But yeah, it's really nice. Actually, it's really buzzing. Obviously, it's Friday, isn't it? So everybody's kind of Soho, out for drinks in town.
And is everyone at Digital Radish back in the office now? Is that the new normal?
Good question. So we're slowly kind of going into a kind of a 2 day week. We're kind of celebrating a few bubbles today with a client. He's come in today. We've just closed a deal from some of our ABM activities.
Great.
He's in today. So yeah, I haven't hit the Prosecco yet. I will do after this with him.
Well, thank you for putting off the Prosecco for another sort of 20 minutes or so. So you're marketing account director at Digital Radish. Tell me, what does that actually entail?
Very good question. So I'm a joint co-founder of Digital Radish, but I'm still very heavily involved in kind of leading on some of our key accounts, which is we think from kind of HR tech to data analytics, kind of payroll, and directing kind of their sort of go-to-market strategies, particularly obviously around kind of more account-based marketing. And I also lead on all of the new business as well for the agency as well. My co-founder, Lorna, is the more of the brains behind the operation, as it were.
So it's quite interesting how, as kind of a co-founder, that presumably meant you had this kind of entire business environment, and you could pick alongside your partner in crime, effectively, oh, these are the bits that interest me. So how did you choose which activities you would do versus the activities of your co-founder?
That's a really good question. So actually, we're quite similar. So we're both from client side. We're both client side marketers. Both had never worked in an agency before. So we were kind of flying blind with that. And I would say we were quite similar in a lot of ways. Lorna's fortunate that she kind of spans the Maya Briggs personality profile. Right. I think she's had to almost make up for I'm very much kind of big picture. Let's make stuff happen. The detail side of me is probably is less so good. So Lorna tends to kind of has to kind of over compromise, if you like, on taking on a bit more of the kind of the financial side, the process role, and she's much more, I think, of a kind of a natural leader, as it were. And so it was quite nice, really. Our position, she took kind of MD, and I stayed close to kind of clients, and it's. Yeah, it felt like it was kind of a bit of a natural thing that we fell into after a few years, really.
So it sounds like you kind of both naturally pivoted towards the things that you enjoy, or which kind of come naturally. What about the kind of reverse of that? In your current role, what would you say the challenges are?
Really good question. Challenges are, I think, certainly now in this, so where we are now, I think, it's very much having to, I'm obviously advising on kind of marketing strategy and go to marketing strategies. And I think obviously since COVID hit, the dread, let's get it out there. I think, we're constantly having to innovate as the market is just changing, at a crazy rate, and having to kind of think about, okay, our buyers and the complexity of our buyers and how they're changing, and so having to think up kind of new ideas, and LinkedIn's overly saturated, digital's overly saturated, and okay, so how do we cut through all of that noise right now? And I think that's certainly kind of keeping us on our toes, which is good, which is a good thing, because we love that type of thing.
Cool. And so let's go back through time now. So I want to know how you got to be co-founder at Digital Radish. What were the kind of key steps in your journey? And specifically, I'd love, because there'll be lots of people listening to this who are at different stages in their marketing career and keen to learn from other people's experiences. So things that others can emulate.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was client side for about 14 years. I started off my career in the post room. Sort of after uni, and kind of worked my way up sort of the marketing ladder, working for various different kind of, I guess, publishing and tech businesses. And when I reached my early 30s, I think you get to that point, you go, what does the next 5 years look like in my plan? And naturally that was to become a CMO for a large kind of tech business. It just didn't really kind of excite me. And the opportunity kind of came around as I was working to, Lorna and I kind of crossed paths, and we sort of thought, let's do this. At the time we did feel like there was a bit of a gap in the market for a bit more of a strategic agency. And so we've set up Digital Radish, and I'm certainly not a natural risk taker. That's for sure. So that kind of, that change piece, I always needed to know, where my money was coming from, and so it was a big, big step for me. So I kind of felt like, not only obviously going agency side, but setting your own business up, it was quite a big thing. But I think if I was to, think about the different kind of moments, as I said, I'm not a natural risk taker. But I think I was very much kind of afraid of change. And I think it was the first time that I embraced change. And actually I kind of found out, actually, if you don't take those risks in life, I think, push yourself out of your comfort zone. I think never standing still I would say I probably spent too long and a bit too comfortable in some of my client side careers. I think if I was to do my time again, I think, you know, if you're really hungry and ambitious, you know, no more really than kind of 2 to 3 years and really for me. And I think kind of take risks. You know, I got told, you know, by an old grey haired man, you know, you're not old enough here, you're not experienced enough to go out there and kind of consult and set up an agency. And I think, you know, there is a bit of kind of definitely back yourself. Mm. I think certainly in some bigger organizations, I think, you know, sometimes I think if you're, you know, you're ambitious and you're kind of hungry, you can be quite stifled by your manager and I think, or those above you. And I think, you know, I think continue to kind of take work from them, you know, don't be afraid to kind of challenge them, bring new ideas to the table. And I think the right manager will actually kind of foster that behavior. They'll be creating that kind of clear path in order for you to do that and not actually blocking it. So I think for me, I think certainly, you know, if you are ambitious, I would take, you know, take those risks, back yourself and you know, don't get stifled by layers upon layers, particularly if you are in bigger organizations.
That's great advice. I also wonder, because it's quite interesting that you had that period of time, quite a long period of time actually, in client side before you moved over to agency. Was that important, you know, is it possible for somebody, well, I mean, clearly it is, but you know, if somebody's coming just straight out of college or university, wanting to go to marketing, going straight to the agency side, would you kind of caution them away from that and say, well, actually, you know, do your time in client first?
That's a really good question, actually, because I feel like actually what we bring to the agency is that kind of 101 kind of marketing. And we've, you know, we've tried to avoid that kind of traditional account manager that I used to be really irritated with on when I was client side, of just a bloody paper shuffle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The idea is that they should be bringing to that account, they should be challenging that account, they should be, you know, questioning what we're doing, constantly looking at the program and optimizing it, and not waiting for necessarily to hand that over to the analytics team to tell you, okay, 4 weeks later that the program isn't working. You know, actually that should be something, you know, if I think about an account manager roles more specifically, being almost thinking and acting like a marketeer when you're on the agency side. But I wonder whether you could do that if you hadn't had that kind of client side background, where you've kind of got a bit more of that rigor, a bit more of that focus on one particular brand, and then you kind of so I would say it's definitely doable. I think, you know, when we've tried to pull some people from client side, they get overwhelmed with, you know, because I quite like pulling from client side, because, you know, there is that more of that kind of marketing acumen, but I think some people can be quite overwhelmed by that,
right?
Working with other, you know, working essentially with other people's brands. And I think I found that actually really difficult. It's one of the challenges that I had going into working for an agency, was actually I loved the brands. You know, I really invested. I backed the brands that when I was client side that I was working for, and suddenly it wasn't my brand. It was actually somebody else's brand. And they were making the decisions. But I think a good agency will be, you know, you'll be standing side by side that client and advising them. And I think I learned that, yeah, I learned that was possible in agency side.
Got it. So you were kind of better able to kind of empathize, I guess, with the clients that you were working with because of that experience.
Yeah, exactly that. You know, that those challenges of, you know, having to answer to sales, but also like run a program and actually, you know, the more of those kind of commercial objectives and KPIs that, you know, that you need to get behind, and not kind of saying, you know, running campaigns and go, oops, that didn't work. You know, we will make them work, because I know exactly what it's like when you spent a shitload of money. Sorry, should I swear?
It's fine. Our audience are grown up enough
to be able to shed load of money. You know, and you know, they want to see return on it. You know, I think actually what's really nice, and I may be going off on a tangent here, Dave, but I think what's really nice, particularly with ABM now, is that, you know, when I was client side way back when, you know, we were still seen as like pens and crayons, like, you know, you go, oh, here's the old pens and crayons lady. I should be like, oh God, you know, whereas I think with the rise of, you know, the whole, you know, with ABM, it's you can align yourself much more with, you know, with revenue, and therefore I'm seeing much more, you know, marketers taking a real seat at board level, and that's changing, and that's so nice to see. I can't tell you, like, that really excites me. That
I think that's right, and I don't think that's just ABM. Actually, I also think it's a pivot towards strategy.
Yes,
and thinking more in a more strategic way. And I was interested when you kind of positioned Digital Radish a bit earlier on in this chat, where you talked about kind of seeing a gap in the market around strategy. I wonder if you can tell us a bit more about that. And this is kind of the big moment for a plug, right? So, because you're doing this free of charge for us, so thank you. So. Yes, there's another question here about, well, what's distinctive about Digital Radish then?
Well, I think initially it absolutely was that. So when Lorna and I were both client side, we felt like there was two different types of agency, right? You had your kind of marketing consultants who, you know, had much more of that strategic approach to truly get underneath the skin, you know, of your market, your product, your audience. And then you had your traditional kind of creative agencies, and they both weren't connected. You know, and the creative agency would be putting together, you know, nice creative pitches, but actually is that creative and that message actually going to resonate with that particular audience? Have you done your research? Are you being more data driven? You know, those things felt like there was a huge disconnect at the time. So that was for us what we felt as a real core USP. It was mapping that kind of strategy with the kind of creative content, etc. But now I think that has changed. I will say that I think agencies are now, obviously they've been forced to kind of, you know, employ planners and things like that. So I think what once was a USP for us maybe isn't so much now, but I would still say that is inherent in our kind of our DNA, if you like.
Okay, so let's move to kind of business marketing more generally then. The world was your oyster when you started out, Renee. So what made you go client side on the B2B front?
Oof. Well, I was in the post room at the time, and it was just a natural natural progression, really. The place where I was at was for just a publishing company, and I just wheedled my way into the marketing department, and then it was super ambitious and just like clawed my way up, moved around. And when I felt like I couldn't move any further, I would then move on.
And what do you love about business marketing?
I love how kind of targeted and personalized that you can be. I love, like, you know, this new tech, you know, that's emerging to help us kind of refine that targeting, you know, informing our kind of insights. So, you know, I think LinkedIn's a fab tool. It's a basic tool, but it's bloody brilliant. And I love the fact that, you know, B2B is changing now. I think we are bringing more of that kind of emotion into play. I'd love to see more clients kind of embrace that. But I think that is, unfortunately, I do think that sometimes the bigger you get, the more diluted that kind of becomes. So that, right. I think the challenge is now to kind of probably for those guys is kind of sustain that kind of strong sort of brand strategy. But I, you know, I personally can't wait to see kind of what next year brings in terms of things like, you know, we spoke about, you know, hybrid events and things like that. And as I said, I think COVID has forced us to be much more agile, much more flexible. Gone are the days of just literally kind of sitting on your hand. But yeah, I think for me, what I love is, I love that, you know, to be able to take something that's really, really kind of complex, because we do work with predominantly with kind of complex tech brands, which can often be, you can kind of go down that road of being quite dry and quite boring. And I love like being able to kind of untangle that, kind of simplify that and make that much more sexier. And I think, you know, I think we are embracing that a lot more now.
So there's a lot. So those are all really kind of good opportunities kind of ahead for us. What do you think the hurdles are? What do we need to look out for?
Yeah, so I think there's going to be a bit around, I think it's going to be around that kind of differentiation, to be honest with you. I think, you know, with the rise of personalization, will at some point it kind of reach a point where it's, you know, completely oversaturated? Things like intent tools, for example, still being seen as a bit of the holy grail. And, you know, let's face it, we've all got access to those intent tools, and we're all kind of, you know, going to that particular audience. So I think, you know, you've got to stand for much more than that. And I think there's a big movement to kind of more kind of ethical brands, you know, standing for something more, you know, more than just, you know, your classic brand values, kind of having a bit more of that kind of deep and more meaningful purpose, if you like. I think, as I alluded to earlier, I think that, you know, the complexity for kind of purchasing decisions as well. I think, you know, digital now, it's changing so, so quickly. You know, virtual round tables in the US, for example, we're seeing fatigue there. Social selling is dropping off. So, you know, okay, we're now introducing kind of virtual DM, you know, and I love the fact that this is, you know, really changing at pace, but I think it's really staying on top now of those changes and making sure that you're adapting and optimizing. I'm throwing all my hands around as if anyone can see me, but optimizing those as quick as possible. And I think having that mentality of fail fast, you know, try something. Like, I love the clients, you know, I love working with clients that are really willing to kind of push the boundaries and, you know, take, just try something, I think.
Okay. So I guess your and this kind of comes, actually, there are links back to what you were talking about in terms of your move to agency side. There's this kind of theme coming out of, you know, just try it, just take a leap and have the courage of your convictions, which kind of seems to be a big part of what you're saying to us today.
Definitely fail fast. And I think, you know, I think I would encourage managers to set their teams up in that way. You know, the need, I think there's a need for being kind of more fast and more agile and take on a bit more of a sprint type approach. I know that's difficult when you are clients, someone you're literally being, you know, you might have a strategy at the beginning of the year, but it goes AWOL because, you know, launched a new product or a sales guy wants you to go to this particular event and they need, you know, X, Y, Z. I think that's quite difficult, but I think if you're able to, is to, yes, you have your plan, but I think, yeah, as COVID's taught us, that can be literally thrown up in the air. And I think we need to, I think teams will need to be set up in that way to be able to be a lot more agile than what some of the bigger companies are right now.
I think you're right. We've got to the section of our interview, which is kind of the marketing desert island discs bit, really. Which kind of where I kind of ask people, you know, well, given your experience in business marketing, what recommendation would you make for a book or a website or a model or maybe a combination thereof that you kind of recommend to other business marketers? So you know, what's your suggested desert island disc reading material?
Good. Actually, funny enough, I did take, so we recently had an offsite to Ibiza, we took the team, and I actually took this book with me, but I definitely did not read it. I think I might have read one page on the plane, but I have read it since. And old Bev Burgess, she just manages to nail it every time. With, obviously, yeah, she's got Bev Burgess, the Practitioner's Guide to Account-Based Marketing. But the second edition, I think, is a lot more, I think the first edition is probably quite theoretical. I quite like to get to a little bit more of kind of the practical side of that. So that would be my first one. My second one would be Humanizing B2B. I'm probably plugging, they're not a competitor really, but Roosterpunk. That's a great one. Again, you know, when we talk about, you know, B2B brands, you know, having a bit more of that kind of emotive pull and being able to really, you know, differentiate themselves. That's a great book for that as well.
We've got Paul Cash on this podcast in a couple of weeks' time. So I know he'll be pleased to hear that you're an avid reader.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, they're probably my two key ones. Obviously your podcast. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And I guess the other thing that we do at this stage, because this is kind of a little bit of a relay type interview in the sense that I always ask everybody I meet to recommend to me the next person I should interview. So who should I interview next and why?
Oh, good question. So Rachel James. She's one of our, she's been in our clients right from the very beginning. I think I've maybe been working with her now for about 4 or 5 years, maybe. Fantastic marketeer. You know, when I talk about loving working with clients that really do kind of push the boundaries and will take risks and is a bit also has that kind of strategic, but let's just get shit done mentality, which is great. Doesn't sit and pontificate. My type of person, you know, get stuff out into market. Let's obviously, you know, it's driven by strategy and data and all the rest of it, but like, let's make it happen. She's great, absolutely great. And she's built a fantastic team over there at Applaud HR. So I think it'd be really interesting for you to hear about kind of her journey and what she's doing over there.
Brilliant news. So Rachel will be the next person in the next episode that I'll be speaking to based on that advice. So thank you. And how about if people want to find out more about Digital Radish, what should they do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very much on LinkedIn. So I'm there, Renee Edwards. And obviously our website, www.digitalradish.co.uk.
Renee, I can't keep you. I can't keep you from the Prosecco any longer. thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me. Really lovely. Thank you, Dave.
All the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Renee Edwards. Thanks too to our technical man from Through the Eye, Andrew Gratian. And thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from, just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk, and I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.